The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Do you know what?
What?
I'm going to talk to Nettie. Oh, blimey. Hello, Nettie. That was a big yawn.
It was a big yawn. I'm really sorry.
Is it a month ago?
What, that I was here?
Yes.
Yeah.
It must be.
Yeah. Did you hear that?
I know. Well, yeah. Welcome to my world.
Do you know what, though? Last month, you know, we had to bring the tone back to professional, didn't we, this month? You know, after bringing the lovely Russell last month.
We did have good fun, though, didn't
crazy
we?
Crazy Russell.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That was good.
Hope he's listening.
Do you know what? I really enjoyed his whole being about what he does. It wasn't just a business.
No.
This is absolutely everything all encompassing. So actually, I wanted him to be like that.
He's so funny.
Because you can't do that 100% of the time without that energy, passion, commitment and consistency.
Absolutely.
We've had a message for Bird from Done Virtually, who says you're welcome to come and colour dinosaurs anytime you want.
And can I just say, I know Elspeth, and if I'm not welcome to come and colour in dinosaurs,
then I'm
not being funny. She's not coming.
To be fair, it does list you as well.
List.
It's just
list.
Yeah.
Do I want to be part of a list, Elspeth? I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll have words. Or not.
Anyway.
Hello.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back for her monthly visit, the lovely Nettie Bunn from Rift Accounting.
Hello.
And once again, you brought us a fantastic guest that you're going to introduce in a minute and we're going to talk to.
Yep.
But when we were off air, you were having a bit of a...
Well, Caroline, you and me all joined in on a bit of a rant.
We did, didn't we?
We did.
And it was a reasonably interesting conversation, so I thought we ought to do it a bit more on air.
Okay, let's backtrack a bit there. It wasn't reasonably interesting. Caroline and I were very interesting, Paul, and you just joined in. Well, Bird, you missed it, so we'll take you through.
I was staying and cleaning, wasn't I? I was cleaning.
You did
the
toilets.
Well, more to the point, you were getting a cup of tea.
Yeah, exactly. I stay, I clean.
We were just talking about, obviously, the whole business bit, and Caroline had been talking about what she does, which I find very interesting, and we were talking about how the whole tears and sick-offs and is when, you know, we get involved with these businesses rather than at the beginning. But we were also talking about how people dissolve their companies sort of under the radar and how naughty and how wrong it is, basically.
You've always felt like this, though.
Oh, yeah, I know, but I've got somebody on the
lawyer
backing you up now.
She's going, do you know what, Nettie, you're bang on right. So, you know, when a company, we were talking about DSO-1 forms, which are designed for when a company no longer trades or, well, you described it.
I mean, basically, it's a simple way of actually shutting down your company when you've, and it's intended to be done when you've, like, settled all your liabilities, you've just finished trading.
Yeah.
Because you used to have to pay, like, an insolvency practitioner a silly amount of money in order to shut your company down, and that was just not a good idea. So the whole principle is it is for people who've settled their debts, just time to put it to bed.
Yeah, and that's it. But it's being abused, and the systems aren't talking to each other. So Companies House and HMRC, probably shouldn't be broadcasting this for anybody who's planning to do it now, but are not linking up enough.
No, and Companies House are letting it go through.
Letting it go through. So you'll have some people who will be a day late and are being chased and fined and paying a lot of money just because they happen to be a day late for something. And you've got other people who are being allowed, that is term in the end, to let their company shut down, who may owe thousands in corporation tax, VAT.
Yeah, although I have been involved, actually, in restoring those companies to the register. So there is a mechanism where they can be put back on the register so that they can then be chased, and the directors can be chased for directors' duties and things.
Yeah.
But that's a really expensive thing to do. And the thing that... It's totally wrong that HMRC and the VAT people tend to be the biggest creditors.
Yeah.
Because we need our taxes paid because it's our money that's not being paid. But there's also third party, ordinary small traders who are disadvantaged.
And the other thing they're doing is often these people are not putting in that set of accounts, which
the last, the final set
that accounts. Corporation tax bill or that VAT bill is not coming to the surface at all. So should there not be a rule that says if that last set of accounts have not been, you know,
that you can't file it unless the accounts are up to date.
There's so many issues there. Many years ago, I was involved with a business that I was a shareholder of that hit financial trouble, and we went into a CVA, a voluntary liquidation agreement. And myself and the other owners of the business were adamant that we wanted to pay off all the debts. But HMRC were a pain in the bum because they wouldn't let us work it through. They wanted to just take whatever money they could get, yeah, like 5p in the pound.
Because they're a priority credit.
Yeah, and they luckily, we managed to convince them not to do that. And as it happened, within a year, we paid every single penny in debt that we owed all the creditors, as well as HMRC, and actually recovered the company and carried on trading.
And it does happen.
Yeah, and it should be allowed to happen.
But the thing that's the other side of that that drives me mad as a business person are Phoenix companies. And that really drives me nuts when somebody puts a company into liquidation, writes off their debts, and then a week later starts up in the same business with a slightly different name. That just drives me nuts.
A week later or an hour later on some prepacks. Not all prepacks are unfair and unreasonable, and I think again you've got to look at the individual circumstances.
But I just think it's, you know, the two systems aren't talking to each other. So you'll have one person who's fined an awful lot of money because, you know, for any reason, even if you've got someone who's very, very ill, you've got to put a case forward for them. You can't just not do their accounts. That's not allowed. And yet you've got other people who are just allowed to...
Yeah, and it's the inconsistency, isn't it?
It is. I think
so that seems very unfair.
Consistency, back to what you were saying. Yeah. Consistency,
see what I mean?
And commitment. There you go. So we sort of ranted about it. I think we ranted a bit more last time than this time. We've sort of calmed it a bit more now.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So,
absolutely.
No swearing or anything like that. It was very well
behaved. But it's interesting, those various elements of company law and opening and closing companies. And I don't think enough people are actually aware of some of the basics of it. And again, it's because they avoid talking to professionals and prefer to talk to their mate down the pub who knows two-thirds of the
Nettie had a great phrase for that, didn't you? So about the mate down the pub. We all hate the mate down the pub, by the way, who knows better than every professional.
Everybody.
But I'm going to disagree with you because I don't believe that the intention of that person would prefer to talk to the man down the pub. I don't believe that at all. I think his intention would be lovely to come and see professional experts to talk about the intention of what they've set out to do. I think it's really sad to see businesses go to that point of failure. And I would hope that most people take it serious in business and that it's grown-up work.
Sometimes, but you're right, it's because people are so busy down in the weeds trying to cope that they don't have a time to look about above it and to take the advice. Sometimes it's they say we're too expensive, but they'll spend the money on a new suit or outfit that they would have spent on an hour of our advice, and that's accountants and lawyers. So it's about priorities.
Yeah.
Or is it what they deem as a value to them? And this is the thing. It's, for example, I'll give you a good example. You know, a handbag to me, it doesn't really mean much to me, but somebody else will go, oh my God, that was amazing. So even though they would know they need to come and see, say, for example, Caroline, they don't value it enough because they would think, I need to have that suit on to get more business.
Yeah, and to be fair, as professionals, we've got to take some responsibility for not getting across to people the value of what we do. But the problem is when it's so intangible, when all you're selling is time and advice, it comes back at the end of the day. If they've taken the time to build relationship and you've built relationship with people... Then they'll seek the advice, and then they can see the value of that advice. But actually, the business owner has to be prepared to invest in that because we do, and most of us will do that for free.
One of the issues here that cuts across both of what you're saying is that sometimes people have to pay for advice that they don't want.
Yes, that's right.
Where the problem cuts in, where they come to you and they go, "Here's my 500 quid. Can we do this?" And you go, "No, you can't.
Nettie was having a rant about that earlier, weren't you?
But that's a truism of the whole thing, you know, because people say, right, I'm going to get a lawyer or an accountant to sort this out for me. You know, what I need to do is X, Y, or Z. And then they go and see a professional and goes, "You can't do that. I'm sorry, you just can't do that."
And then guess what they do?
Yeah.
Ignore that advice.
They ignore it, and then they try and do it anyway. Yeah. And that's where a lot of the problems come in, and where the man in the pub syndrome comes along, because they'll go and talk to someone and they go, "No, I ignored it. I don't know what they're talking about. My mate did it and it worked fine."
Well, we often say you can't put a price on bad advice, and that's the truth. You can't. You have no idea ever what it costs you, in both financially, business-wise, and all the rest of it. And it's, you know, nobody thinks that they've got all the good ideas, but if you don't discuss it with the right people, you've got nothing to judge it by.
But here's the honesty as well. Innovation, growth, doesn't come from a good idea necessarily.
No.
Uber, or if I'd said to somebody, look, I've got this business where can you let a room out in your house to a stranger and they just come in and out of your house and you don't know who they are and they've got no check on them at all, would you say there's a business in that? If I came to you as an expert, either of you two, you would say to me,
well,
no, what would you honestly say to me? You'd say no.
Yeah.
You would. It's true. And that's where Airbnb. You wouldn't let a stranger come in your house, Nettie.
You would put in certain things that would make that work.
Which to be fair, Airbnb have put in.
Yeah. So you would. But what it is people think that crazy ideas will always work.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody's trying to stop them. But the thing is, those people are more likely to come and talk to you. It's the people who do take the advice from the man in the pub. And I'm sorry, there's so many of them. So many of them. That guy should charge commission. Seriously.
The unfortunate thing about the man in the pub is we're being derogatory about a man in pub. What it actually is somebody else in business, normally, that's unrelated. Got a small business, unrelated to what they do, trying to impart some knowledge that they think they have.
They're extrapolating from their own experience. They're taking a particular experience and turning it into a general
practice. Exactly.
And sometimes it translates, but most often it doesn't.
Yeah. Very quickly, have I ever told you my silly idea story? Many years ago, I was offered the opportunity to purchase a significant share in a company in Holland. And I went to visit them, and they explained their business proposition, which was a device they'd invented that replaced something that was used commonly right around the world. Yeah, and I said to them, "How much is this device going to cost?" And they said, "About £3,000 a unit." And I said, "And the thing it's replacing costs how much?" And they said, "About £6." And I said, "Does it do more than the thing it replaces?" And I said, "No, not really." Which is why I don't own 35% of TomTom.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It was a company called Palm, another software company. They developed TomTom, the first GPS sat-nav system. And I go, "Oh, I can buy a mat for £6. You want me to stick this in the roof of my car?" Because the first ones were roof. Born, you had to drill a hole in your roof and stick it on the roof. You stick an aerial on your roof, and they were £3,000. Okay, buy a map. What's the matter with you?
I know. and going back to Airbnb, if you follow their footprints, what they did with obviously it isn't what it is, how it started isn't where it is today.
Yeah,
where they literally went and lived in some of these people's houses that they used to because they wanted to see what the journey was, and you go, this is crazy, crazy. This is crazy. The TomTom is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody said to me the other day, if you were 18 again, what advice would you give to yourself? Oh, well, that's easy. Invent Facebook. Next question. But why didn't you do it at the time? Because you didn't think about it. Because it was crazy.
Or you might have thought about it, but the man down the pop told you not to.
Yeah, you don't want to do that, mate.
His mate tried that. It didn't work.
Yeah.
And maybe his mate did, and it didn't.
Absolutely.
Anyway, enough of that. What I'd like you to do now, Nettie, is to introduce this month's guest for us on The Counting House.
Well, we've got the lovely Lucy Hall joining us today. And I think Lucy's got quite an interesting story. She's one of those people that I love whose husband has come to work with her. You know, we've had a few like that, haven't we, over the years, where it's the lady in the family who starts the business and has a go, and it's the man that comes and joins in. Is that fair, Lucy? And you've grown something over the last few years working, first of all, I think the first big one was NatWest, wasn't it, that you worked with your social day stuff?
Yeah.
And then obviously from then on, she's also a mum and got loads going on. So, and a big event coming up in London. So I'll let Lucy fill in the gap.
Absolutely. Well, let's start at the beginning. First of all, Lucy, tell us about Avisio. How do you pronounce it?
It's Avisio.
Avisio. Yeah.
Um, So Avisto Media is the name of our company. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Avisto Media is the name of our company.
Mm.
And we are a content marketing agency,
right.
Essentially. So most of our clients are corporates and larger SMEs. So we're dealing with companies like Aon and Pfizer and people like that. And we create content. So we create things like podcasts.
Well, okay.
And we've got a mobile podcasting studio. So we go out to the clients,
right.
Which could be in the UK or abroad.
Yep.
And we record podcasts that reach really niche audiences.
Yep.
So where a lot of people think, I have to get to a million people.
Yeah.
We know that some people only need to get to 500 people,
yeah,
or 1,000 people.
Yeah,
and
if
they're talking to those people, engaging those people regularly, then it's working.
Yep.
So that's the kind of stuff that we do. And our mission statement across all of the stuff that we do is empowering businesses to stay relevant in an ever-changing digital world. So that's with Social Day, that's with the Digital Women event and community that we've created and that kind of thing as well. So that's just what we do in a nutshell.
Fantastic. So I want to come back a little bit because you're absolutely right. And I'm a massive fan of niche businesses, and I think niche is everything. And so many people get this wrong. And funnily enough, with Jobs in Kent, my own business, when we first launched it, everybody went, what are you doing Kent for? Why don't you do the world? No, because most people don't change jobs by moving to Perth. They change jobs by moving to Thanet. So, you know, focusing on that niche is important. As far as you're concerned, with the content that you provide, you're providing the podcasting or the social media content or the blogs or whatever that go around it. Do you actually do the targeting as well? Do you find the niche targets?
Yeah, so a lot of the time with larger, more established business, they know who their target audience is. They just don't know how to talk to them effectively. So we find the right channels to do that, and we work out what content's going to be best to help to engage that audience, basically.
Yep.
And we'll look at doing it over a period of time and with a level of investment from not just the person who runs the company, for example, or the head of business, but also some other stakeholders within the business as well. So through employee advocacy. So employees actually a lot of the time have their own networks through LinkedIn that can be tapped into as advisors. So we go much further than just, you know, creating the content and that kind of thing. We go in and we educate businesses and the advisors and that kind of thing as well.
Because that's crucially important, and that's where so many corporates especially don't really get it, when they'll just broadcast stuff to people and, you know, don't interact. They don't really think about who they're talking to. They, you know, they ignore the feedback that they get if it's rude or naughty or whatever. And really, you just think, why are you doing this? You know, why are you even here?
Exactly. And I can give you a really good example, actually, which would work for SME audiences as well as larger audiences. One of our clients, which is a large insurance financial services company, we asked one of the advisors to do a video and put it natively onto LinkedIn, which is, they normally don't do things like that. So they were just there and we said, just answer the question you get asked most of all. And they answered the question, and it ended up with a meeting which could end up being a £2 million piece of business for a pension fund.
Right.
So it just shows you how powerful it is
to
make sure you're using your employees to actually, you know, relay the message.
Mm, absolutely. So are there particular platforms that you find more useful than others, or is that dependent on the business?
It depends on the business.
Yep.
But in terms of B2B audiences, we find LinkedIn is really, really effective.
Yep.
The reach is really good. But of course, reach doesn't matter, because it only matters if the reach is the right reach.
Yep.
So it's just about getting that message right, making sure that we're talking to the right people, and making sure that they're consistent with that message as well.
Absolutely. It sounds like lots of fun. You're doing podcasts. Do you do video as well? Because a lot of people talk about video these days. On a similar note, a lot of people know that many years ago I used to work for Goldman Sachs. And Goldman Sachs these days do a video and a podcast on a regular basis, attacking different things.
Yeah.
They put them out in the general marketplace, but they are very specific because, you know, it depends on who they're talking to. They were talking to one of their analysts the other day, which I watched, because she was talking about internet investment, which, you know, for me was interesting because I have a number of internet-based businesses. So I kind of get that. Let's move on a bit now, because you launched a very successful Social Day in London. Tell us what that's all about and how it's working, how long it's been going, and when you're going to do it again.
Okay, so Social Day started out as a an event that I wanted to attend. I couldn't find an event that actually had social media education to the level that I was looking for it. So it was normally just bundled in, like this is how you do Twitter or this is how you do Facebook as part of a you know, larger marketing conferences and that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, working social media, working content marketing, let's, you know, talk about what the latest stuff that's going on and how people can use that within their businesses to target, you know, the right audiences and to engage with people and that kind of thing. So I spoke to NatWest and we created this event in Bishopsgate. It's kind of advised, it evolved over the years because what happened was is the marketing directors and the brands and that kind of thing started attending the event. And we thought, you know, this is not an SME event anymore. I mean, SMEs can come because they're going to learn, but this is an event for marketers and for corporations and also for brands and that kind of thing who want to know what their peers are doing. It's for the social media marketers. So now we have this community of social media marketers and social media managers. It's a 3-day event.
Right.
And it's a festival, basically. We have two parties and we've got some amazing brands speaking like Amazon, the BBC, Guinness World Records, people like that.
That's fantastic. And did you say it was at Broadgate that you...
We moved it. We're at Congress Centre now. So okay. We have 700 marketers over 3 days at Congress Centre.
And who are you attracting as an audience these days? It's interesting because we're kind of, you know, you set the scene yourself. You know, there were loads of social media things going on in the early days where people went, do you know what Twitter is? And everyone went, no. And they go, well, this is how you use it, basically. Mm-hmm. So it was most of these things were just a description of the platform.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've moved that on vastly from there.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing for me is, like, who are the audience? Who's coming to your event?
Yeah.
And why are they coming to it? And I don't mean that in any kind of derogatory sense, yeah?
No, it's fine. So the audience of people that come to the event are social media marketers from brands and businesses, marketing directors, and also company founders and owners and that kind of thing who also want to know what other people are doing. It's focused on influencer marketing and social media marketing, and that also includes video, analytics, and that kind of thing as well. So if you're a marketer or you're an agency, agencies, we love agencies, agency owners, and obviously agencies do business with other agencies, so it's amazing. The amount of connections and business that comes out of Social Day is absolutely incredible. So we did the awards as well in November. We did the Social Media Marketing Awards.
Oh, okay.
And it was really cool. It was a club.
Was that the first one?
So we had, I think we had about 200 people there. It was at Club Tropicana, brands.
You were having a party, weren't you?
We just went through, we whizzed through the awards, like, because we knew people don't like sitting around for hours doing the awards. We whizzed through the awards. We had this massive party. All the money went into drinks. And we just had this massive party, and it was absolutely incredible. So we're doing that again this year. But would you mind if I told you a little bit about something that is SME focused?
You go for it.
If that's okay.
Yeah, of course it
is. The whole loop.
Go for it.
So there's this really exciting thing that we just created with NatWest called Digital Women.
Digital women,
yeah.
I saw a film about that once.
Did you?
He's on one of those.
It was with Kelly Brook or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
Is this the one that Amy's
Weird called? Science, it was called.
Yeah. Right. We've got a few women coming to speak at this, actually. It's in London, and it's called Digital Women on the 11th of March. It's around International Women's Day.
Yeah.
And we decided that there's a need for an event that helps women with digital skills. There's a massive digital skills gap. Often there's a confidence issue that needs to be addressed, and often that people go out of the workplace, they have children and that kind of thing, and then they come back and the world's moved on massively and they need digital skills, and the way that the world's moving really quickly, we thought this would be an amazing event. So I spoke to NatWest, and we're doing this event on the 11th of March, and with the aim of educating eventually 1 million women with digital skills. So we set up this group on Facebook, and within 2 weeks we'd sold 200 tickets to the event.
Fantastic.
And we've got women every single day going into this group providing digital skills from something that they know to help each other. It's like a skill sharing.
Sure. It's interesting, isn't it? Reinforcing that, we have a massive digital skill shortage in the UK.
Yeah.
Some research from the Federation of Small Business, and I've I've told this statistic a few times, and every time I tell it, I go back and check just to make sure I didn't get this wrong, and I'm lying to people, but I go back and check every time. The FSB calculate that 76% of small businesses have no digital footprint. And the main reason cited is a lack of digital skills. They don't have the knowledge to do it. It's not because they don't want to do it. They don't know how to do it.
Exactly.
So what you're doing is fantastic, because there's lots of elements in this as well, presumably, you know, with women returning to the workplace.
Yeah.
Doing online stuff is doable in a far more flexible manner than 9-to-5 work. Yeah. Mm. So it kind of ticks lots of boxes in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
So this is the first one of your Digital Women series, yeah?
Yeah. It really took me by surprise, to be honest, because I put a couple of posts on social media, so that's why you might not have seen it, because I put two posts out, LinkedIn, Facebook, maybe something on Instagram, and literally sold 200 tickets to the event.
Right.
And then set up this group, Digital Women, and within a couple of weeks, we've got 800 members within this group, just every day, like I said before, sharing skills with each other. And I think the long-term aim is to educate as many women with digital skills as possible, and then perhaps even look to go into charities of whether it's disadvantaged women and that kind of thing, and actually give them digital skills so they can go into the workplace where they've never had the opportunity, because they never had the opportunity to get the digital skills themselves.
So where's the event taking place?
It's in Bishopsgate, 250 Bishopsgate, at the NatWest in the auditorium.
Right, OK. And the women that have signed up so far, you've got 200, you say?
Well, we've got over 200 now.
Yeah, OK. And where are they coming from? Are they predominantly from London and the South East, or are they coming from all over the country?
All over the country.
Yeah. So is this something that you think you might take on the road, or what are your plans for it, do you know?
Yeah, I mean, we've already discussed doing one later on in the year.
Mm.
But I think, because we're still in early stages at the moment, it's quite broad, but the thing that we want to do is just educate a million women. I know it sounds like a big number, but it's completely possible.
Yes,
it's going to be much bigger than one event and one community. It's going to be something that we hope is going to help a lot of people. But I think eventually we'll try and take it out to different cities and countries if we can. But, you know, like I said, it's early days and there's not a real, you know, focused plan for it yet.
Sure.
Just kind of seeing how
you're kind of letting it unfold and see how it works.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about the speakers. Who have you got? Who can you remember you've got?
So like you said, we've got Amy from AM Marketing. She's coming to speak, and she's going to talk about how to work in a male-dominated industry, which digital is. It might not seem like it because you've got all of the kind of digital moms and that kind of thing, but it's very male-dominated industry, and how to overcome those challenges. We've got Becky Sims from Reflect, which she's really good, and she's going to be talking about scaling a digital business, scaling and growing a digital business, which of course she's been doing really amazingly. We have got My Fussy Eater. She's actually based in Kent as well. She's written a blog, and she gets 800,000 visits a month on her blog.
Wow.
She was a city lawyer, and she moved out to Kent, started a blog because her children were fussy eaters. Yeah, 800,000 visits on her blog a month, 70,000 followers on Instagram.
Wow.
Absolutely smashing it, making money from brands.
And what's she blogging about?
She blogs about, cook food for toddlers and children, because they don't. I know, I've got a toddler. They don't eat anything. It's so hard to get them to eat anything that's not a chip. So, or like a sausage roll or, whatever, ice cream. So she tries to make the food look fantastic and hides the vegetables and that kind of thing. She's taken off. It's got a massive following. She's going to be talking about how she did that, which I think is hugely exciting.
Mm.
And then we've got skills workshops in the afternoon, which is these 20-minute kind of... we've got Katie King as well talking about AI. So our morning of inspirational women are all from Kent, actually.
Wow.
And then in the
afternoon... They make them well in Kent, don't
they? Make them very well in Kent. Yeah. We have a great digital female digital community here. And we've also got in the afternoon skills workshops, 20-minute workshops and all kinds of different... I hope I'm not being too boring.
No. Funny enough, I'm waiting for you to breathe so that I can read a couple of tweets we got.
Sorry.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, no, these are tweets about what you're saying.
Okay.
So Laura Lawrence has said, Lucy's doing amazing work with what she's doing. And Jill Serkin said, I agree totally with Lucy. There's nothing worse than Twitter accounts which just automated, timeline, never read, no engagement, no point. And we've got other things people are saying, you know, in terms of agreeing with you with where you're going with this. So, 1 million women. Yeah. You've got 250 so far.
Well, we've got over 800 in the group already.
But you've got 800 members, yep.
Yeah, we've got 800 members. So it's about sharing, going into the group, adding your female friends who you think could deal with help, digital skills. Doesn't matter if they're, you know, 18 or 100.
This is an interesting phenomenon, isn't it, of women's networks that isn't quite the same with men. Mm. It's like Mum's Net and things like that. Yeah. Once women join these things, they tend to bring in other people, whereas men aren't so good at bringing in other people into joining things because they tend to be more
competitive. So that's like the digital world reflecting the real world.
Yeah.
Men are included, so it's an inclusive community, but because I think men are vital to making sure that, you know, women are being empowered and that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, we do find there are a lot of women inviting other women. It's growing quite quickly. But yeah, obviously it's inclusive. So
absolutely.
And I think some communities say so, no men allowed. Yeah. But that's not the case. We have men in our group and they're active.
Absolutely. Yeah. My point was more about how good women are networking.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're much better at networking and getting people involved in things.
Yeah.
On the whole, as a generalisation, which is why you get these big groups like Mum's Net and things like that, where they all encourage each other to belong. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've got these two things happening. I know as well that you also bought Social Day locally at the back end of last year.
Oh, no, that was that. So Digital Women is Kickstart Digital Women, and it's the same. It's part of the same event. So it's Kickstart. And that Kickstart event, we did it in Kent.
Right, okay.
At Buckmore Park
months
ago.
Yeah.
And from that was kind of like, you know, we need to do one of these for women.
Right.
You know, to help women. And then from that, when we realised how needed it was, we was like, this has got to be something that
so
we
So was that the start point of this, where you tried that as a kind of local experiment and then went, this is going to work and we're going to go big on this?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the majority of our audience were female anyway. And a lot, because I've got this little guide to social media and the planner and the calendar and that kind of thing that helps people with the social media content. And I think a lot of the people in the community already were women as well. So it was just quite a natural progression, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. So global domination coming along.
You just want to help as many people as possible. You
absolutely,
know?
And it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Do you know what? I think conquering the world's fine, and I think Lucy can do it. Have you seen this energy? I'm actually getting it from it.
Yeah.
Get some energy. Get some energy from Lucy.
Absolutely. You know, all these things are part of what we were talking about in the change in society, in the change in way things are happening, the change in the workplace, the change in how we do work, introducing more flexibility, using people's talents from all kinds of sections of the community are all crucial things going forward into the future. We're moving away from a homogenized world where everything was compartmentalized and on a production line. And even if you didn't work in a factory, offices were made to be like production lines. Call centers were made to be like production lines. Well, that's dying. It's going away. You know, we're much more dynamic and flexible. And have to be more dynamic and flexible. But more than that, on the other side of the coin, what I love about the things that Lucy's doing and people like Lucy is they're introducing more flexibility into the workplace. Mm-hmm. And that is crucial so that we include as many people as we can in what's going on.
There's a lot of flexibility. We've talked about this a lot. Mm. There is a lot of flexibility.
Mm.
We're just not empowering ourselves with the flexibility. So even though there is this, you can take your work home, you don't have to come into the office, we as humans are still going in and go, do you know what, I was in at 7:30 this morning and I didn't leave until 6:00. That's still happening, even with the flexibility being
present. Caroline will have to close her ears here. I've got the people that work for me, When they come to work for me, I give them a contract of employment, but I go, what's the hours? And I go, whatever you want. And they go,
oh, well, you see, I support that because yeah. it's actually about outputs, not inputs.
Yes.
And this whole presenteeism, which is a really last century culture, just is so not relevant anymore.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely about outputs.
But I've got this thing, I go, I don't care when you come in and I don't care when you go home. Just do what you do. And if you do it well, you know, go home. But I tell you what, I go in at 8 o'clock, everyone's there. And at 5 o'clock, they're all still there.
behaviour is dominating.
Yeah.
Even though we talked about it, I had a meeting straight after this. I was going straight up, hour and a half journey to get there. Mm. Why? Why am I going to travel up the M20 on the 25 at 50 miles an hour? I said to them, can we do it virtually? You couldn't have, they breathed a breath of fresh air like, yes, I've just saved myself 3 hours in travel. Yeah. Caroline and I went, oh, my gosh, I've now put it tomorrow. And everybody's, why aren't we doing this? Because our behaviour is dominating, not the flexibility of the workplace.
Yeah, yeah. We know you can do it, but we're just not doing it.
Well, that's right. It's habit, isn't it? Habit, and human beings are creatures of habit. It's actually about cultural change and cultural shift.
Yeah.
And that's actually what Lucy's doing, is actually really focusing on cultural change and cultural shift.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing as well. If you'd have said 10, 15 years ago, probably even less than that, that a lady who's got fussy children would make her living out of writing a blog about it, people would have probably thought you were mad.
Do you know what my nan would turn around and tell them that?
What?
She would just say, well, then they don't eat. I'm serious.
Yeah.
That would never be a problem with fussy. It's true, right?
It wasn't an issue.
It wasn't an issue. When did this become an issue with our children? Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
It's probably. Only relative.
But it's around choice.
That's exactly
what I was going to say. You know, in grandma's time, it was bread and dripping or dripping and bread. And that was it. You know, there was nothing else to eat. And the advent of choice and fast food and easy to and all that kind of stuff is what caused these dilemmas. It's a changing nature of society.
Yeah. Also, I was going to say, I think social media has enabled us to find our own communities. So it might be like niche things like My Fatty Eater and that kind of thing. But it helps bring together people with like a unique set of challenges, like mums in business and mumpreneurs. People don't like the word from mumpreneurs, but actually, if this word ties people together and helps them, you know, it's a community. Let them do that. It's just, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really important. That is entirely where we're going, in my opinion. Yeah. And a lot of people haven't kind of worked this out. We talk about globalism, but people don't understand what it means. The fact is, like this very radio show, I call this radio show a community radio station. But what we have is communities of interest, not communities of geography.
And, of course, there is a risk in that, which is the risk of the echo chamber,
where those communities
don't connect with each other.
Yep.
And they only talk to themselves, which is where you get the whole fake news and the aggro and hate of social media. And it's actually trying to create channels that enable us not just to be echo chambers, but to actually use the power to actually connect across those different communities of interest.
That's a very good point. It is a very good point, because you do see that, and Facebook's the worst for that.
So,
you know,
you say Facebook, and actually Facebook are doing something really amazing, if you don't mind me saying. Facebook are doing something called community leadership circles, and I was just up at Facebook.
Yeah, they're really good, actually.
I was up at their conference on mental health for community leaders, and they'd invited all of these mental health charities along to show what people were doing. Essex County Council are actually doing an amazing job of reaching out to communities through Facebook. But Facebook are actually bringing together their community leaders, because community leaders have this amazing responsibility. They're looking after people, you know, sometimes, you know, Indian women living in London, or, you know, just Nigerian people who have just like loads of different kind of things. I can't think of them off the top of my head. There's these amazing communities that are helping people every day. Mm. And these community leaders have responsibility. Often they have someone in the community that says, you know, I'm going to kill myself or something like that. And that's the first place these people think to go, because this is where they feel safe.
Yeah.
So the community leader has this responsibility to make sure that they're saying the right things, they're doing the right things. Mm. And there's just this massive weight on their shoulders. And Facebook is saying to them, you know, we're bringing you all together and we're going to help you. We're going to give you the tools and the skills and the community that you need as people running communities together, and they're running them all over the world now. There's one in London, CRC London, and they just, it's just an amazing thing they're doing. I mean, I think it's part of their, the program, well, their actual vision of making sure that they bring in communities closer together. That's the whole vision, isn't it? So this is a really important thing for them, and they can see the good work that people are doing. Just cool. to give a good side to the whole Facebook, thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But and you're absolutely right. But I also agree with Caroline. It's not Facebook themselves. It's the users of Facebook getting trapped in their echo chamber.
I mean, yes, the algorithms have a responsibility in the sense that what they do is just sort of re-emphasize. Mm. You know, if I've gone out and bought a bin store, I really don't need a load of other ads for bin stores on Amazon because I've already bought a bin store or whatever.
Nuts. Yeah, that drives me absolutely nuts.
So there is work that the networks are going to have to do to actually make their and AI will do this because it will make their algorithms more intelligent. But but we as users are the ones that program the algorithms, and we need to program them to make the illogical jump, not just the logical jump.
Yeah. It was like remarketing was driving me nuts a couple of years ago, where I'd buy something and then I'd get remarketed with the same product at a lower price than I paid for it because it was now on sale, and that would just drive me nuts. I'd just think, you're just doing that deliberately to annoy me now.
It's so accessible now. Retargeting is so accessible, especially through Facebook and that kind of thing, because you have things like a pixel and there's so much education around how to do it, for small businesses. That it's not like the hardest thing in the world to do anymore. So it is getting better and is getting easier. And AI already exists within the Facebook platform, within LinkedIn, and that kind of thing as well. It does drive people mad, I think. Yeah. But I also, it means that you're getting targeted with things a lot of the time that you're actually interested in, rather than things that you're not interested in. Which in the old days you'd just get targeted with things you're not interested in.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's balancing it, isn't it? Yeah. It's like, please give me 20% of new stuff.
Yeah.
Not just 100% of old stuff.
Yeah, it's what
people say, I'm interested, I've just bought this, therefore you will also be interested in this rather than the thing that you just bought. Yeah.
Absolutely. Lucy, we could talk about this forever. It's a fascinating subject.
I could talk forever.
Thank you so much. If people want to find out more about Social Day, Digital Women, whatever, what's the best way to do all of that?
So Social Day is socialday.co.uk. Aviso Media is our agency, content agency, avisomedia.com, AVISOmedia.com. And Digital Women is kickstartsocial.media.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Those links are actually on the Kent Business Radio website as well. So if you didn't write those down, you can find them by going to the Kent Business Radio website, and they will be there forever on the show in the archive, which is show number 415. So do check it out. But for the moment, Lucy Hall, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. We're